Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Jenny Potter. Jenny is the author of Self-Sabotage No More and the creator of the Alarm Method, a five-step process designed to help people remove triggering emotions that lead to poor decisions around love, family, money, and health. And today we'll explore how her method can be especially beneficial for veterans dealing with emotional triggers and how they can apply these steps in their daily lives. So before we get into it, welcome to the show, Jenny. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank you so much, Scott. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, you bet. So let's, I guess, dive right into it. I mentioned the Alarm Method kind of in the intro. Can you start by maybe explaining kind of the background of this Alarm Method and what it is and kind of how it helps people to overcome these emotional triggers?
Yeah, so I kind of created the Alarm Method because I was coaching a lot of people, working with a lot of people around finances, health, specific goals. And what we were noticing was that there was this kind of common theme, I want to say with everybody, but specifically with my clients, where they would be sabotaging so they would know what to do, but they wouldn't be doing the thing that they knew to do. So I would give the simple example of, you know that when you go for a walk, you feel better, and yet you don't put on your shoes and go for a walk. Why? Right? If you know you feel good, if you know you feel better in general, if you know your day is better, why wouldn't you? Or you know if you hit the snooze button, the day is going to start a little rougher, but you still hit the snooze button. So I got a little bit of like passionate / obsessed with, why do people do what they do? Like, why do people do things that are bad for them that they know don't make them feel good? And then why do people not do the things that they know make them feel good? So that sort of started the journey. And I discovered a few variables, Scott. But one of the variables was unprocessed emotion. So what that means is emotion from a trauma, from something that occurred, whether it was like on duty or like, you know, whether it was as a child, something that occurred maybe in an accident. It doesn't have to be a major trauma either. It could be like your brother broke the lamp and blamed you and your parents believed your brother. Okay. And you experienced this disbelief and hurt and this, you know, no one ever believed me. And then you hold on to that for the rest of your life. And so anyways, I started to explore this concept of trapped emotions or unprocessed emotion. And what I discovered was that when we can identify the old emotion or the old memory, and it doesn't have to be traumatic or emotional or uncomfortable, but when we can identify it, we can then release it. And so there's several methods to do that, but the most simple one, I wanted one that I could just teach anyone on the fly, that we could talk about and, you know, share with your audience, that I could share in my book, that basically anyone could learn quickly and use immediately to identify maybe some of the unprocessed emotions that are affecting you in your day-to-day, whether it's because you're procrastinating, or maybe you're always short with your mom, or maybe you feel guilty all the time, but you don't know why. Yeah, it applies to all emotion, but any of impacts our health or finances and our careers and our goals or choices. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it, based on what you're describing, it sounds like stuff that can affect, you know, all aspects of our lives. And, you know, you talked about career and finances, but like relationships, not just, you know, maybe intimate relationships, but also interpersonal, like friendships and neighbors and coworkers and all these other types of relationships as well. And how you treat people at the grocery store or, you know, things like that. Like just in general, it seems like it would probably kind of fit in that way with all aspects of your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It does touch every area of our life.
And a lot of times that we, you know, I know we on this show, we typically focus on veterans, but this, like you said, this could apply to just about anyone. But as far as veterans go, we do have struggles with intense emotions and PTSD related things where there were these intense traumas. And so, what you're talking about is something as a way to kind of help manage these triggers that come up from time to time, or in some cases they happen all the time, as it may seem like. But how do you see that this method kind of can it tackle those intense emotions as well, or is this something kind of more on a like an everyday thing? I'm not sure.
Yeah. So the scale, I mean, ideally, you are aware, and if you're listening right now, you're aware of a behavior or habit or a thing that you do or a response that you have that may feel a little bit out of place or doesn't serve you. And I give my poor daughter, she has tattoos, and it was kind of a thing. She bought them before she was allowed, and then it became this kind of thing with us. And I remember when I was first doing this work and I was releasing these emotions, I was identifying them and releasing them. And again, we'll walk through that process for everyone to be able to do, but I was releasing stuff and my daughter came in and she had a new tattoo and it was on her neck and it was like right across her neck, right? And it said blessed, which, you know, could have been worse, could have been like a barking dog or something or whatever. But, you know, she's like young and making decisions that we felt like, you might change your mind in a year or a day or 2 months or whatever, right? So, but she got this tattoo, and normally I'm just going to say, like, be vulnerable here. As a parent, that would have really upset me. Like, really, I would have been 0 to 10, mad. How did you do that? You know, what if you don't want that on your neck next year or whatever? Like, I don't mind tattoos. I love tattoos. And she is gorgeous and rocks all of her tattoos. But it was more at the time, this sort of thing that we had going on, and she was younger. And so I had just been releasing my emotions and stuff around my parents and how I was parented and what I was allowed to do and not allowed to do. And she came in and I just said, oh my gosh, you got a new tattoo. And she said, yeah, do you like it? And I was like, well, I don't love the location, but you know, it's your body, your life. And she was shocked, but I was way more shocked. Like, I was really, I just give this example because sometimes we react to people, things that they do, something someone says to us at the grocery store, or someone bumps into us, or a friend says something and we think about it for a long time. There's a reason why, and oftentimes the underlying cause of that response or reaction is a unprocessed emotion. So it, and you know, we can address that type of thing. And then of course there is like PTSD where people are responding to a certain sound or noise because of a past event. And either way, obviously I can't guarantee, but either way, this is a very simple way and a safe way to identify and kind of clear the old stuff that's stuck.
Right. And it seems like, you know, just from your example there with your daughter and your reaction to what, you know, she did. And I know as a parent myself, I mean, my kids are younger, so I'm not at that age where I'm worried about, tattoos or anything like that. Like, that's not on the radar quite yet. But, you know, I know other things that they've done throughout the years, and I've had that 0 to 100 kind of reaction, and that wasn't the best reaction. Looking back, I've kind of realized, and I've toned things down a little bit, and I've tried to figure it out. Like, you know, provide, you know, go 0 to 100 when they're about to get hit by a truck. Sure, I got that. But when they, you know, break the lamp or they do something like that, like, that doesn't need a 0 to 100 response. That's something, you know, a little bit lower. That needs to be toned down a bit. And I recognize that. And so I worked on that, and I've, you know, throughout the years, I've gotten better at that type of thing. But, you know, there's other people who do struggle with that. Right. You did mention, you know, this is a kind of a multi-step approach. Can you walk us through each step of this method, the alarm method, and kind of talk about how people might be able to use these things as a way to handle a triggering situation.
Right. Yeah. So usually I'll use like procrastination or a behavior that someone doesn't like that they know that they do. So it's, I don't want to say it's advanced, but like trying to stop yourself from going 0 to 100 when, you know, you could think about, so the example I gave with my daughters, you could think about an example where you got upset with your child and you wished you hadn't. Like looking back, you were like, oh my gosh, you know, I lost my temper so quickly. Or maybe when you're driving, you experience what people call road rage, or, you know, that you get upset quickly. If you're listening, just grab onto some type of example of behavior that you don't want to do anymore, or you don't like to do. And again, you can use something more gentle, like hitting the snooze button, or not going for that walk, or maybe every day you're like, I'm going to eat healthy, and then you don't. So kind of notice what it feels like. Notice what it feels like when you make the decision to eat healthy, or when you think about losing your temper. So the first thing is awareness. So the ALARM method is an acronym. So A is for awareness. So the first thing is just being aware around your behavior, like how you're showing up. So I use procrastination. So if there's something you really need to do, like your taxes, or, you know, like fill out some paperwork, or, you know, make a phone call. If there's something that you really need to do, but you're not doing it, become aware, like, okay, I'm not doing this thing. What am I feeling? So the very first step is just literally being aware, like, is it anger? Is it shame? Is it fear? Is it anxiety? What's the emotion that you're experiencing? The next step is to locate the, like, locate where in your body you're feeling that. So some people get that right away, like, oh, in my stomach. Like, when I'm nervous, it's in my stomach. Or when I'm mad, it's in my head. So just notice where in your physical body you're feeling that. That's actually kind of an important step. The reason why we know that we're emotional is because our body tells us. And so we don't really think about it. We just, we're angry, we're happy, we're sad, we're all the things, but we don't really think about, how do I know I'm happy? How do I know I'm sad? And just to go a little bit further down that rabbit hole, what an emotion is a vibration. So when you feel fear, like you said, 0 to 100 to, because there's a fast truck coming, what happens is your kidneys pulse fear and you react. Your body knows that vibration as fear, act fast, move now. And you grab your child and, you know, pull him onto the sidewalk. Well, that pulse, that vibration, it lets us know fear, anger, sadness, happiness. So every emotion has a different vibration. And so, and each of our organs are in charge of different emotions, and it's all kind of cool. But the reason why is that when your body pulses that fear, it also then releases neurotransmitters and chemicals and serotonin and, you know, whatever, whatever that emotion, whatever reaction your body responds in a certain way with chemicals and stuff. And when you get that chemical reaction, that's when you feel it. So you feel it in your stomach, you feel it in your chest, you feel it in your head. And not everybody feels emotion in the same place. So it's unique for you and that vibration. So A is awareness, L is location. And the next question, once you have that location, is asking the question. So A stands for ask. The second A stands for ask, and asking the question, when have I felt this before? And so now I just always tell people, don't do this exercise while you're driving or operating heavy machinery. You will probably will not have a major emotional response. 9 times out of 10, you won't. But sometimes when you ask that question, you will have a memory or something that popped up that evoked an emotional response. So just, I always just say, because I did do it once when I was driving and I had a big emotional response. And after that, I was like, oh, that was a good thing.
Sure.
Now I can warn people not to do the same, be careful lovering and like, you know, shouldn't have been driving. So just always, you know, take a moment, take a time out, sit down if you can, if you're able, and just have the awareness, locate, and then ask the question, when have I felt this before? Now, your brain will actually find a past event. Well, it might be when you were little, it might be in high school, it might have been something 3 years ago that happened at work, might have been something a colleague said to you. You know, someone made fun of something, or but you have this memory. Don't dismiss it when you have like a random thought of someone saying something weird to you or making a comment on Facebook or something. Just notice whatever that memory is, because usually the original or it's stacked. Sometimes there's more than one memory, but usually it's connected to that memory. The emotion you're experiencing now is connected.
Quick question on that. So when you're thinking of this memory, is it thinking back to the, maybe perhaps the original, you know, memory of the first time this happened, or another time that maybe something similar like this event? So just using, for example, like, you know, going that 0 to 100, right? Where a normal reaction, that would be a normal reaction if your kid's about to get hit by a car or something like that. But if your kid instead, you know, drew on the wall or something, and that was your reaction, but then, like, if that's what you're going back to think about, is that what you're looking for? Or are you looking back to an actual emergency where this would have been the appropriate reaction? Or I'm not, just to clarify.
Well, just to be clear, let's say your kid drew on the wall and you had a 0 to 100 response. Okay. You're in right now. You're like, whoa, I remember that time. I got super upset. It felt out of character. Like, didn't really feel like who I am. It almost felt like someone took me over and got mad, you know? Like, it's kind of weird when that stuff happens. Well, it's weird because it's usually something that had been unprocessed and living with you a long time. So when you think, when have I felt this before around being upset around the drawing on the wall? When have I felt this upset before? You might go right all the way back to when you broke a toy and you were a kid and you were spanked.
Sure.
And, you know, or whatever. Like, I know not everyone was spanked. I was spanked. But you know, when you were a kid and you were punished, you might have a memory of something else that, you know, we're talking about drawing on the wall. So you might have a memory of going to a job interview and not getting the job and being like, well, that's interesting, but you really felt like you were supposed to get the job. Or you might have a memory. So it could be very random and not theme related, but the goal is to identify when we have a strong reaction to something. 9 times out of 10, unless it's like you need to grab your child off the sidewalk, right, to pull them to safety. If you're having a response that doesn't feel normal, or it doesn't feel, like, it feels a little out of place or intense, that's where there's usually an old occurrence, big or small, that has impacted us and we haven't dealt with it.
Yep, that makes sense.
And so that's rising up again. So it's awareness, location, ask the question. Now, some of you might not have a memory, and that's okay. We don't have to force it. You don't have to try. Spend a couple minutes with it. Like, when have I felt this way before? Usually something will pop up. A lot of times people want to dismiss what pops up. Like, oh, it couldn't be that. Oh, I dealt with that. Oh, that's weird. Why would I think about, you know, high school or whatever? But really, if it is that event. And then, when you do remember the event, just note it. Like, just, okay, interesting. That time when I broke that toy. And then we go to the next step, which is release. And the release, the R in alarm. And the release is really just, we want to be present to how we're feeling and then relax that area of the body. So if you're feeling that in your tummy, if you're feeling that in your chest, you're actually physically going to relax that area of your body. And then you can breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth, 5 to 10 times, just very relaxed manner. As you do that, if you like, and the step that some people might call woo-woo, but it's like there's so many reasons why this works. Part of it is almost like a habit. Once you get into the habit of doing it, your body knows, oh, this is how we release emotions. And so you can literally go shoulder to wrist, shoulder to wrist, shoulder to wrist. I call it unpacking. And you can clear out with intention whatever that feeling was. So if we go back to the child drawing on the wall example, you're cool. You're like, ah, I'm so mad. And then you take a time out and you think, okay, I'm really mad. When have I felt this way? Where am I feeling it in my body? I'm feeling it in my stomach. When have I felt this way before? Oh, when I broke that toy when I was a kid, that's so weird. Okay, I'm going to breathe into that area. I'm going to relax my stomach. I'm going to allow this emotion. And then I'm going to clear it. And I'm just going to unpack it. I'm going to unpack anger, unpack anger, unpack anger. And so that's kind of your process. So even though we've been talking about it for a long, we've been taking lots of time to talk about it, the actual process can be quite quick and simple. If you're at a dinner table and someone says something that triggers you, like you could do the shoulder to wrist, shoulder to wrist, shoulder to wrist, and probably no one would notice, or they might think you're a little cold or something. But you can do it quietly. And that will help move out, in essence, the vibration. So explaining what an emotion is earlier, it's almost like that vibration. The vibration is supposed to rise up and out. Like we're supposed to welcome it, notice it, accept it. Like, okay, danger, anger, happiness, peace. And with positive emotions, we don't resist them. We experience them and we allow them. But with negative emotions, we do resist. We don't want to feel sad. We don't want to feel angry. We don't want to feel guilty. We don't want to feel whatever the feeling is, anxious. And so we push it down. And most of us are taught as children to resist or push down emotion or not express, especially men. But men in particular are, encouraged to not, to repress those tears, to hold back their hurt, to not share their vulnerabilities in the emotion department.
Right.
So what happens is it all builds up. And so this is a comfortable way for you to release your emotions and move forward. And you can do that in the moment emotions or thinking about past emotions as well. The last letter in alarm is M, and that's your mantra. And your mantra is that really, what do you want to feel? We go back to the child drawing on the wall example. How do you want to feel? Well, I want to feel forgiving. I want to feel peaceful. And maybe what I want is for my child to say sorry and then for us to like fix the problem together,
right?
Clean the wall together or whatever. Might be just an example. But the mantra is I'm at peace. I'm at peace. I'm at peace. And or whatever you want to speak out. And you can actually do the same unpacking movement, but I call it packing, and you're packing in. The intention is you're bringing in peace. And so you're bringing in peace, bringing in peace, bringing in peace. And so again, that physical movement, there's a few reasons why it works. For the thing, sure, the no, show will just say it works.
That's good, because I think, through this show and other veterans that I've talked to, other just people in general that I've talked to who experienced some sort of trauma at one point or another, they recognize that their reactions to a situation are not appropriate for whatever this new situation is. And a lot of times it's because of, like you said, this trauma that they haven't dealt with. These unresolved emotions and the experiences that they've gone through, they just haven't quite resolved yet. And they recognize and then oftentimes feel guilty about their reactions to something like, you know, going 0 to 100 when the kid is drawing on the wall. That's not a 0 to 100 moment, but 0 to 100 kept them safe at one point in time where, you know, talking about maybe a service member who was deployed overseas and everything's high intensity because everything tend to be a life and death experience. And if things didn't go right, people made mistakes, people got hurt, people got killed. And so that type of reaction kind of became like almost like muscle memory where that's just how you respond to things that are not going 100% according to plan. And when your kid's drawing on the wall, that's not according to plan. And so you go 0 to 100 because that's just what you did. That's the muscle memory that you develop. And so this, the way it sounds to me, the way you described it is you're retraining that muscle memory. And I know it's not muscles. I'm just using that as a kind of analogy, right? Right. So I think
great
that
analogy.
Is what we need to focus on is developing the new reactions to different circumstances. They may be very similar circumstances to what maybe happened in combat in terms of maybe somebody who you were giving an instruction to didn't follow your instructions as kind of a high level thing. You could be instructing your child to clean up their room and they didn't do it, right? But it's not a life and death situation if there's toys on the floor, you know, that, or their clothes are not in the laundry basket or, you know, things along those lines. That's not a life and death situation. So if you go 0 to 100 in that circumstance, that's an inappropriate reaction. So you have to relearn and retrain your brain and your body to react in a way that is appropriate and figuring out how to do that. And this framework that you have, the way you kind of broke it down, makes sense because you're really slowing down, you're stopping, you're thinking about what is happening, where you're feeling it in your body, how your body is reacting, and you're thinking back to the past and you're trying to get your brain back on track. So it's now like kind of more in the present moment so it can focus on what is actually happening here, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That was such a good description. And I would encourage people to practice with smaller stuff like procrastinating and like being irritated when you're making dinner, like, or, you know, just practice, like, what am I feeling right now? Where am I feeling it? When have I felt that before? You know, just kind of that practice, because then in the moments when you are 0 to 100, you can stop and go, okay, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, dream response here, right? Extreme response. What am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? Okay. And the other thing that's very helpful with emotion or extreme response is understanding that you are not your emotion. Now, everybody knows that, but our language is I am angry. I am sad. And not all countries, in many other languages, is I feel anger. I feel sad. And so we can say that, but we've been trained to say I am. And so what it means is we actually identify.
Right.
So now we are the anger, right? And so, right? So if you're like super mad, you're like, oh, I'm mad. Well, now you're declaring that you're the anger, that you're angry, you're owning it. And so one thing that I like to do that I feel like adds some separation and a little bit of humor for me, but I have a weird sense of humor, but is saying body is angry. Because as soon as you can say, because sometimes, especially again with men, not all men,
sure,
not, you know, like in some women, whatever, you know what I'm saying? But with a lot of, they can, it's a very simple way to tell someone like body is angry. So like, you know, if you have a relationship with, if your wife, I mean, this really works for a female or male, I use the example that one day I had like 16 calls in a row, Scott. It was a really busy day. And I just texted my husband and I was like, hey, babe, do you think you could just figure out dinner? Normally I do. But do you think just this time you could just have some kind of food waiting for me when I get off these calls because I'm really hungry? And I get off my call, I come out the door, my husband comes in the door, and right when he sees me, he remembers, oh, I was supposed to do food, right? And like, I'm like so hungry and now hangry. And he says, are you angry with me? And I look at him and I say, body is angry.
Sure.
And then we both start laughing and then we figured out food. But it like separated because I wasn't mad, but I wasn't really mad at him. I was just mad because I was hungry and I kind of knew that there wouldn't be any food. And so if you can like separate mm-hmm. by kind of using something as simple as that phrase, when you eat that extra moment to figure out why you're
the way you said it too, right? When you first said it, what popped in my head is it kind of sounded almost like a caveman talk, kind of like body angry, you know, like that type of thing. Right. And it kind of made me chuckle a little bit when you said it, because it was a funny way of saying it, but in a way I don't think that was your intention of saying it that way to, you know, sound like that type of response, but, and maybe it was, but in my thought process is if somebody came to me the way you did to your husband, if my wife came to me and said, body's angry, I would be like, okay, well, this is funny. And I would start laughing, which would make her start laughing. And now we kind of separated, that emotion, that angry emotion. Now we're laughing. Now we're happy. You know, now we have you know, there's still an unresolved issue. You still were hungry and you still wanted food, but we can laugh about it at this point. And I think that kind of replaces that negativity where otherwise someone might scream and yell and say things that maybe hurt the other person, things that you might not be able to take back and that type of thing. And at least you can laugh about it and then figure it out together, as opposed to spending time yelling and screaming and arguing about something that you could otherwise be figuring it out. Does that make sense? Is that kind of along the lines?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the word I was looking.
I like it because it diffuses also, and it separates. So you become the observer of what's happening instead of being in it and owning it. So done few things that I could have said to him, yes, I am angry. I asked you to blah, blah, blah. And I kind of knew you wouldn't. I could have gone there. Or I could have said, I'm angry, but I'm not angry at you. But the like body is angry kind of like just diffuses it. So I like it. It's a cool tool to use, especially with couples and as a parent, right? Because especially if it takes you a minute to process, like oftentimes that 0 to 100, Scott, is because like many of us, you know, had difficult childhoods or experienced stuff, speaking to veterans, what they've gone through, what people have gone through, and teachers, bosses, you know, that kind of stuff. We respond to 0 to 100 because we've had experience in the past of having to, like you spoke to already. So if there's anything we can do to give us buffer from the response we're feeling mm-hmm. to the actual reaction, you know,
so
the thing
what are
that
some
we
of
do,
the challenges that people might face
good.
When they're
yeah.
trying to implement this method into their lives? And you know, I can see like, at least initially, you know, before this becomes almost muscle memory type of thing where it's just as natural as, you know, doing anything that you do every day. I could see remembering to do this could be a challenge, but are there other challenges that people face when they're trying to do this, and how can they overcome those challenges?
Yeah. So remembering to do it definitely in the moment. That's why I sort of suggested the practicing of like other things that kind of like, oh, you know, every time I decide I'm going to go on a diet, I go and eat sugar. Like,
right.
I wonder why. Like, why do I eat that bucket of ice cream when I decide to lose weight or whatever? And like picking smaller things that aren't as big of a deal to kind of play with. Or if you have family coming over, family is often the source of triggers. So if you've got like a dinner coming up, you know, being prepared, like, okay, I'm going to practice my alarm method at the table because, you know, my sibling always said this or my mom always said that or whatever. So you kind of know the people and situations that trigger you. So having that little chat with yourself before, but also just practicing. Another thing that comes up is some people struggle with the location piece where they don't know where they feel an emotion. And so again, practicing that, because we wouldn't know we were feeling an emotion if we didn't feel it somewhere. So how do we know?
Based on like that location, when you first mentioned it, when you were going through all the step-by-step kind of breakdown of this. I know like probably a couple of years ago, I probably would have been like, how do you tell where you're feeling an emotion or, you know, how do you sense that? But since then I've started doing some, you know, meditations where I would, you know, basically it's a kind of a guided meditation where it's like, okay, well, feel, you know, the breath coming into your lungs. And it's like, normally when you breathe, you don't think about feeling breath coming into your lungs, but if you stop and you slow down and you think about that and block everything else out and focus on that, you'll actually feel, you know, your chest rise, your lungs and or inflating your, you know, all that. And then you'll feel the breath go leave your body. You'll start to feel that and you'll start to become more aware of things around your body. And you can do that with other parts of your body as well. You know, you can feel your toes on the floor. You can feel, you know, things that you just don't think about normally because it just are always there. You can start to think about it and you start to notice these things. And I think that might help, you know, just again, muscle memory, doing it over and over again, you start to get better at this. The more you do something like this, the better off you'll be. So I think doing something like that might help to identify some of the location issue. And again, when you're first starting doing this, that's probably going to be a difficult step. That's one of the ones I would have imagined would have probably been tough before you mentioned that.
So I remember once so my background is in counseling, and when I was in counseling school, we kind of identified that I had a lot of repressed anger. Now this is way before the motion work and stuff that I'm doing now, but my counselor or teacher at the time said, just allow it. And right. I was like, but how? Like, I don't want to. I didn't want to feel anger. I didn't want to allow it. I didn't know how to allow it. So she was like, well, welcome it. I'm like, it was like, it seemed impossible or nebulous or like non-tangible to me. And what I like about the location piece of this exercise is that when you go to the relaxing step, which really is releasing, relaxing, allowing, welcoming, it's all the breath, it's all the, you know, you can actually physically relax that area of your body and allow. So, I mean, most of us, the reason why we have unprocessed emotions for the most part is that we didn't feel them, then we pushed them.
A lot of times, thinking about the military veterans, especially combat veterans who are maybe dealing with something, some traumatic incident where maybe one of their buddies got injured or killed or something, and they were in the middle of a fight for their life at that time too. So they didn't have time to just stop and grieve and cry and be sad. And that emotion, they had to kind of stuff that down somewhere deep down inside. And so they can continue doing what they needed to do. They had to go fight and they had to keep their head clear so that nobody else got injured or killed or anything. And so they had to kind of stuff some of that stuff down. But at some point, you got to go back and find that. Where'd you pack that stuff and then bring it back out and deal with that, right? Is that kind of what you...
Oh, that's what I want to speak to, because there's a lot of fear around dealing with that old stuff, right? It can be scary. And oftentimes when I work with people, they're like, oh, I just don't know if I have the space to process everything. And it's kind of a fallacy or like a common mistruth that that you have to experience the intensity or relive the moment to process an emotion. So I just want to speak to that, because this method, once in a while, you're going to have like waterworks or, you know, really notice like, whoa, like that was a big one. Like I let that go. I didn't know. Oftentimes it's as simple as relaxing and allowing it to just like steam from up high, just like lifting a lid, steam from up high, it's gone. And once it's gone, it's gone. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because there is a lot of people don't deal with their old trauma and emotion because they're terrified to relive it. Like they just don't want to. Nobody wants to relive trauma. But I'm here to tell you, you don't have to relive it to process it. There's lots of different methods out
right.
there.
And I think another thing that might hold people back.
Do relive it to process it, but you don't have to.
Regarding this is if... They might feel that if they do release and let go of this and allow this to the steam to escape, you know, using your example there, that it might feel like they're forgetting the person who maybe was injured, or the event that happened, that they're going to allow themselves to forget about it, and they don't want to do that to that other person. They don't want to make them feel like their sacrifice was not, remembered and honored and that type of stuff. So they, in a way, they kind of torture themselves to continue remembering this, and it's not helping them to move on. And again, I understand how moving on might sound like something that they don't want to do. I don't want to move on from this, this traumatic experience, because I want to honor this person and honor their memory and their life and all that. And so I don't want to just move on, because that sounds like you're forgetting about it, but that's not what you're saying here, right?
I'm saying you can take the gold with you. You can take the memories with you, but just release the pain associated with. You can still carry those memories and that importance and those events with you, but you don't have to carry the charge. And because that charge is now impacting your current relationships and your current opportunities and your current endeavors. And so you can still take it with you. If there's a special way to like honor that event, whatever it was, then create your own special event to do that, but you'll never forget. It's just that you can remember.
Yeah. And that's a good word, I think, for it too, because that charge, the trigger, things along those lines, those are the things that I feel like are maybe holding you back, and that you need to do something to allow yourself to continue while still honoring and remembering kind of what took place. If that's the thing, like some people might be totally fine with like, I want to forget that this ever happened. Mm-hmm. And if they can figure out a way to do that, then, and if that's what they're looking for in their life and that's what helps them move on, then more power to you. But other people I do know, they don't want to let go. And some of that, again, even just looking behind you, the self-sabotage no more on the wall that you have right there, right? And that's the name of the book too. That feels like a bit of self-sabotage. Like you're holding yourself back for what? And that's a thing that you have to kind of look at. Like, yeah. is it worth it to now live the rest of your life in a way that you're shackled and you're held down by this traumatic event, so you can't move on and go live a great life, the life that you deserve, yeah. the life that you should have, you know, which knowing, you know, of all the people I've talked to on this show, military veterans who's ever lost anybody in combat or knows people who have died in combat, every single one of them has always been like, they would want us to go on and live a great and happy life so that their sacrifice is not in vain, right? So do that. Stop self-sabotaging yourself and, work on that stuff internally first, I think. You had mentioned, work on some of those smaller things, but work on those things that you know. You don't have to wait for something else to happen to you, but you know that you do those things. You hit the snooze button. You don't go to the gym. You don't go out for a walk. You do those things. Work on those things, those little things. And that's like a great way daily to practice this. So you start developing that muscle, if you will, mm-hmm. and then when those other things, those external things start happening, then you can start applying mm-hmm. that. But if you don't have that practice in place, it's not going to be, you're in your nature to just do that. It's going to take some time, to figure that out, I think. Right. Yeah. So, going forward, I know there's absolutely. Probably going to be some listeners out there yeah. who want to find out more information about, your book, Self-Sabotage No More. Tell us a little bit about the book, what they can expect from it if they grab a copy, where they can get it.
Yeah. So if you go to jennypotter.com, which is JennyPotter.com, there I have free resources in there. Right. There's also the alarm method, and you can click on a link that'll just take you to Amazon. Amazon, my book lives. So if you want to hop to Amazon and get a copy, the book is short and sweet. I wrote it my goal was to impact as many people as possible with some really simple tools. I kind of start out and explain why we show up the way that we do, and then move into how we can shift that with some simple method, not just emotions, but also like beliefs that we've created along the way and things like that. So it's really the feedback I get is that it's very easy to read and that there's very tangible and simple tools in there that will help you live a more clear life, a life where you feel more neutral and can get more clear on your goals and your mission and what it is, how you want to feel in the world and what you want to create in the world too. So
that's excellent. Yeah, and that's, I will have a link to that in the show notes.
Really, so the website again,
JennyPotter.com, JennyPotter.com. Again, that link will be in the show notes, so you don't have to jot it down if you're driving or anything. Like, don't do that. Just click on the show notes when you get to wherever you're going, and you'll be able to grab a copy of the book there, find out more about the alarm method and all of that. So before we wrap up the show, just real quick, I usually like to end the show with a little bit of humor, either telling a joke, watching a funny video of people doing stupid things. Some of the jokes I tell are pretty corny, but that's fine. If it gets someone to laugh, even if it's laughing at me, I'm willing to make a fool out of myself. So that's kind of the goal here, just get everybody to laugh. So so here's the joke. So there's a tough old cowboy from Texas. He's counseling his granddaughter if she wanted to live a long life, the secret was to sprinkle a pinch of gunpowder on her oatmeal every morning. And the granddaughter did this religiously until the age of 103 when she died. And she left behind 14 children, 30 grandchildren, 45 great-grandchildren, 25 great-great-grandchildren, and a 40-foot hole where the crematorium used to be. I don't think the tough old cowboy was considering the fact that she might be cremated as opposed to buried, which would have been a whole lot safer for someone who has gunpowder in their bloodstream. So anyways, thanks again for taking the time to join us, Jenny. And I really do appreciate you sharing the alarm method and your book, Self-Sabotage No More. Hopefully some folks out there will go out and grab a copy of it and reach out to you to find out more information if they're needing some help and some guidance to kind of help along their journey of healing and stopping that self-sabotage. So thank you again.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.